Welcome to another episode of Connecting the Dots podcast. My name is H.F. Mason. I'm a general surgeon and chief quality officer for Baptist Memorial Healthcare.
Hello, everyone. I'm Brad Parsons, vice president of market operations at Baptist.
I'm Gemma Jones. I'm an improvement coach based in the UK, passionate about helping people learn how to think and behave in more effective ways.
Well, guys, we are very excited today to have Andrew Bourne on our on the show. He is coming to us from the United Kingdom. Andrew has had a very interesting career. He's worked in the dog-eat-dog world of business and finance in the UK. He has been a vicar in the Anglican Church. And if that wasn't enough, he went back and got an MBA when most of us are thinking about slowing down work. And today we're going to be talking about his book. It's called A Life's Work: How to Find Meaningful Value in Everyday Work. And we're just really excited to hear about you and your journey and how you came about to write this book. So to begin with, Andrew, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's really exciting to be on this podcast. I'm Andrew, and as you say, I started life, my career in the greed is good world of Gordon Gekko back in the 1980s in the banking industry. I was a strategy consultant in London, and so I've sort of started experiencing that very competitive environment in which organizations can operate. And I'd done a business degree before that. And then after a few years, I went back to college and studied theology. And then having graduated in that, I was a minister of a church, an assistant minister. And then I took over a church right on the edge of what we call the Square Mile, which is the old Roman city of London, which is the main financial district of London. So it's an area I was used to. My clients were all based there. But now I was starting a church. It seated 700. There were six people going to the church when I started the first Sunday. So it was quite a challenge, and grew a church. Wanting to communicate faith, Christian faith, in market language and in everyday language, and was very struck by the way that people's work was dominating their lives. And often the biggest pastoral issues that I had were people who were just so dominated by work, that they had these high salaries and nice apartments, but they were never there in their apartments, and they had never had time to spend their salaries because work was demanding everything from them, not just in time, but also in emotion and every sort of energy. And then I was invited, I was a chaplain at the local university, and was invited to do an MBA, an executive MBA at the business school, and was really struck by how the language of business that I was used to from the 80s, this was in 2012, just around the London Olympics that I was doing this MBA, the language of business was changing. And so the fundamentals were the same, but the way that people were seeing those fundamentals had changed. I mean, one little example I often give is there was a lecture on how to value a bond, a financial bond. And the lecturer put a formula up on the whiteboard and explained this formula. And I'd, as an undergraduate, I did this finance degree, so I was quite familiar with the concepts. But I went up to the lecturer at the coffee break and said, "Isn't it strange that you value a bond based on the risk of losing it?" And he said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, yeah, everything in a bond is in the formula that you've just given is fixed, apart from the risk factor. That's what adjusts the price." And he said, "Well, yeah, and what's your point?" And so my point is, I value something based on what it does and what it means to me, but you're valuing something based on losing it. So it's a fair value rather than a positive value. And he said, well, you don't understand. And I said, well, I do understand. I just look at it differently and started to ask this question, what is the difference between a sort of soulless organization and a soulful organization? So in terms of your work, you know, I'd be interested to, I think it's quite easy to name a soulless organization. I'm sure your work isn't one of those, but it's actually more difficult to answer the opposite. What makes something soulful instead? And started to investigate that, and then was invited to research that full time. So I left being a minister of a church and got a desk as a WeWork in London. And then after COVID, got a desk at a business school and have been researching that question and running symposiums and different activities to answer that question, which is, you know, the sort of meat of what I'd love to talk about. But that was a very long answer to your first question.
Well, that was a great start. And Andrew, we really appreciate you being on. We are a faith-based, not-for-profit healthcare system. We talk about our faith and our purpose, our vision and our mission a lot at Baptist. Really proud of that. So I think this dovetails really nicely into kind of who we are and what we espouse and what we really center our leadership work around. We also have a management system that's based on principles. And a lot of those principles, people principles, are the first and foremost. So respect, humility, empathy, to build trust in how we care for the people we work with. But ultimately, everything is centered around our patients and their families. And so I think there's a lot of commonality in what you've studied and what you work and what we do. So again, thank you for being here. In all that you shared, my question is, when did you have time to write a book?
I think writing is my happy place, because you know, you just lock yourself away and write. Also, I think my writing comes out of speaking and preaching, and the book is deliberately coming from a faith perspective. So it's the sort of the roots of the book are investigating the way that God has made the world and has made the world to be a world where we generate value. So that, you know, the founding principle is that Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, God creates the heavens and the earth. So, you know, that's a sort of headline statement for the whole Bible. But then the heavens and the earth that God creates in verse 1, verse 2 says, are formless, empty and dark. So that matter is created ex nihilo, from nothing, but that matter is formless, which in Hebrew means, you know, it's, you can't get your hands around it. It has no substance to it, and it's empty. So it's void of useful purpose, and it's dark, so it's invisible. So that the whole of creation from that point on, God is giving light so that you can see matter. He's forming the planets and the species and the stars and every part of the earth, and he fills it so that the creation is teeming with life. And God looks at creation and says, this is pleasing to the eye and good for food. So it has useful purpose and teeming with life, as I say. And then, so the first calling of God on people is actually to go and do exactly the same thing. So to be fruitful and multiply is another way of saying go and form and fill and generate value. So, you know, in effect, you know, God's saying the first command isn't thou shalt not kill. The first command is thou shalt go and create and generate value. So the world isn't made in a way that we just sit on a deck chair drinking a pineapple smoothie or whatever that's just given to us. We have to work, and we have to continue to work. So I think that was my starting point to say, well, if that is the case, then how have we missed that? You know, how have we sort of we've become so focused on one type of value, which is money, basically, that we've forgotten all the other types of value that are available to us. And particularly in the financial world that I was in, you know, it's sort of show me the money. It's all about money. And actually, money is just a means of exchange, isn't it? Actually, the question is, what are you going to do with that money? How are you going to invest it and grow it? And lots of Jesus' parables actually are about this topic, which I find interesting. You know, so we always think his parables are about farming, and some of them are, but quite a lot are about investment and the use of money. And Jesus' ultimate question, which is the sort of starting point for so much of what I write, is that where your treasure is, there your heart is also. So if your treasure is just in accumulating coins, then your heart will be very dull and very small. But if your treasure is in generating all these types of value that God has made us to be involved in, then our heart will be great. I mean, one of the interesting connections here is that when I was at school, one of my heroes was a guy called John Wyatt, and who was a doctor. And I wanted to be a doctor like John. And I did science A-levels in order to do medicine. And you know, if anybody asked why I wanted to be a doctor, I would say, well, because I want to care for people. And I'm sure you hear that. And, you know, medicine is called the caring profession, isn't it? And one of the things I try and say in my book is actually every profession is a caring profession. And every profession we can be adding value to people. Yeah, so the book is really trying to open people's eyes to this purpose that God has given us to be generative people. Yeah, I mean, I can go on, but well, I'm conscious.
It's great. Thank you.
That is great. And you know, you talk about being generative people. How do we, you know, when we think of value, it's always, almost always in the terms of money. You know, what's the value of this? Well, it's worth $100 or £100 or whatnot. How do you get people to start thinking differently about value? I mean, you talk about in your book, you talk about, you know, communal value, individual value. How do you get people to start thinking not in monetary terms, but in other terms?
Thank you. So I use the analogy of an iPhone, the cameras on an iPhone, because an iPhone has three lenses. And the reason for that, you know, Steve Jobs would have probably said, well, it has to be one, it has to be flush with the surface of the phone or whatever. But the engineers would have said back to him, it has to be three, because each lens does something completely different in engineering terms. So the telephoto lens zooms in on the detail. The portrait lens focuses on the face, and everything else is blurred in the background. And then the wide angle lens takes in a huge vista. So I use those three lenses to look at value. So the telephoto lens looks at the value, it zooms in on the value of the products and services that you create. So in medicine, you know, you're serving your customers, the patients and the families. You're serving them with medicine and with different services. And I look at that in two aspects. So not just the utility value, but also the beauty value, because actually you're not just increasing, you know, saving someone's life or healing their fractured bone or whatever. You're giving them confidence. You're bringing a family back together that have been separated because someone's in hospital or incapacitated. You're actually, there's a huge beauty not only to what you do, but the way that you do it. So, a doctor can be cold-hearted and very sort of functional and just mend someone's kidney or whatever and walk away, or the doctor can have a real beauty. And that's where your values, as you said, Brad, come in to underpin your work as an organization. So I look at how you're serving customers in terms of utility, because you've got to do things that people will pay for and actually get the value of healing, but also beauty in the way that you do it. Then the portrait lens looks at the value of the organization and the culture and the people that you deal with in your daily work, because those people can often get hidden. Because again, if you're just about money, then people are assets that you use to gain money. And if they're in the way of you getting on with your work, you just get annoyed or you avoid them. But if you see people as part of the value that you're giving in your work, you see them very differently. So a guy called Raj, that I think I talk about in the book, who came along to the church where I was an assistant minister, because he wanted his child to be baptized. And we said, well, you have to go through Alpha, which is sort of a basic Christianity course first. And so he sort of did, because he had to, and his wife wanted this. But during that, he got to hear about the gospel and the Lord Jesus, and actually made a commitment of faith. A sort of weekend away that we had. And on the Monday, I said to Raj, let's meet after work and let's look at the Bible. He bounded up to me on Monday evening and said, Andrew, you'll never guess what happened. On the way to work, I realized that the cars going past had people in them. And I started to think about those people. And I went to the train station and there was someone checking tickets. And I thought, I wonder if they know about Jesus. And then I got to my glass steel office building. He's a lawyer. And I realized there's a desk on the ground floor with people behind it. And I thought to myself, Raj, I've never asked their name. So I went up to them and introduced myself. And he saw people very differently as a result. And I think that when I'm talking to people individually about my work, I ask them and they say to me, well, my work's a complete waste of time. And I'm not like a doctor who saves lives. I just push paper or whatever. And I say, well, what conversations have you had today? And they say, well, I talked to this staff member who was struggling with something. Well, that was of immense value. By talking to that person with compassion, by helping them, serving them, you're doing what Christ told you to do. And you are the hands and mouth of Christ. And therefore, the portrait lens focuses on forming people. So that's the sort of individual value. So how are we mentoring the next generation? So one of the things I talk about in my book is my daughter Harriet, who works for PwC in LA. She trained in London, and she was transformed by that training from a sort of dizzy Edinburgh graduate, you know, who was into everything, into a business professional. And you know, she wasn't transformed into a sort of Star Trek Borg, but she was transformed into a confident woman in business. And that was because people invested in her. And in fact, I had a meal with one of the very senior partners at PwC and was talking about my work. And she said, oh, I'm not sure what value I bring. And I said, Harriet Bourne, she's the value you brought, because I know that she's mentored and taught her to my daughter. So there's the individual value, but also the relational value of a culture that has transparency, a culture where there's forgiveness, you know, culture where you can be honest about mistakes. and actually those to be resolved. Now, I know that within firms, mistakes sometimes can have very big consequences. But if there's a fear and a hiddenness, then organizations work in silos, don't they? But if there's actually a willingness to want to help people, then actually the organization creates more value, and also the mental health of the employees will be much greater as well. So that's the portrait lens. And then the wide angle lens looks at the impact that our work has in wider society and in the local community, both in present community and also in future generations. So that's the sort of six aspects of value, but it's based on these three very specifically different lenses. And I think you know, lots of people talk about social value and sustainability value and things. So I'm trying to say, rather than pick out one or two, let's look at the whole and actually see that these often work together.
Yeah, I love the analogy to the iPhone. I think that resonates with a lot of us and the cameras and the different values that you create. Jim, something he said made me think about you and kind of your work, certainly your work with Kata Geeks. And so I don't know, I'm interested in getting your thoughts on what Andrew shared and how it applies.
Thank you. So much of what you're talking about, Andrew, seems to me to relate to connection and relationship. And, you know, between humans. And I think, you know, there's some organizations and some industries where some of that gets really lost. I think, you know, I think it's coming back. But a lot of my work is about coaching people and teaching people to coach people. And yes, we've got a set of questions that we use. It's a very structured manner of coaching. But I talk with people about how the questions are 5% of coaching, and the rest is about the connection and the relationship and those other perspectives and dimensions to it. And you've really got to love your learner, that if you're coaching someone, you've really got to love them and respect them and want to support them if you're really going to help them reach the heights and succeed and achieve the things that they're able to. You know, people talk about, well, could we use AI to coach people? You know, could we just have an app, you know, to ask the questions? And I always get very cross when people talk about that, because it's really about that human to human connection and bringing that value. That's not just I'm asking the questions, I'm showing you that I care, I'm showing up for you, I'm interested, I'm supporting you, and I'm giving you what you need in the moment. So I love that aspect of different forms of value, rather than just the transactional questions and answers kind of side of business and coaching.
Yes, and thank you. That's really, really helpful. And you're absolutely right. There's such a difference between a coaching conversation and, you know, if I'm speaking to my insurance company about a problem, and which is very transactional, and you know, bots can probably do that and probably are doing that without me even realizing. And in some ways, you can't quantify that in a metric, can you? Which I think is one of the frustrations. Some people say to me, because I run a workshop based on these six types of value, and people say, well, will it help my bottom line? And I say, well, that's not actually the point. In fact, it's completely not the point. Yes, it probably will, because it'll make your company more generating more value. But actually, if you try and quantify this, then you've sort of lost it already. How would you help me, Gemma, in terms of convincing people of that who are just into quantifying?
I mean, I'm in the same dilemma, you know, I run my own business and, you know, trying to quantify and my measures of success for myself. It's very tricky to think about that. But I think some of it comes back to thinking about who the customers are, and not necessarily just customers who pay you money. I mean, anybody that's interested in or impacted in the work you do and the value that you provide, and understanding it from their perspective. Because I think it's really easy to understand value from my perspective as the person, you know, doing the work, but I'd rather think about value from the perspective of the people I'm delivering something to or helping them achieve something. So I think that's where I try to focus and get some of that feel from.
Yeah, and I can't help, Jim, I want to jump in. I can't help but think about the pandemic period and the math. What we experienced was a massive loss of employees that just left the workforce for a lot of different reasons. But a lot of it was because the work had shifted and become so difficult during that period. And it was very painful for us as an organization, because what we saw was immense amount of experience walk out of our doors. And I think we're still kind of recovering for that. The highlight is, you know, the additional value that we recognize came from our people. People with experience and passion for the job that they were doing, that is really, you can't find it on a spreadsheet, Andrew, to your point. I mean, it's not present, but man, did we ever feel that loss as an organization? And I would argue still recovering from that loss. And so I hope that we're able to hold on to and remember that value. And again, Andrew, I kind of shared on the outset, but Baptist is an organization that places a tremendous amount of value on our people. And we have that starts from our CEO and leader, Jason Little, who stands up and talks to all of our leadership every quarter. And he talks about caring, and he talks about the value that our leaders create and the value that our teams create. And so it's really embedded in the culture. But we love learning additional things about how you've seen that work and how you've learned over time the impact that people have to each other. And I love the conversation.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And you know, I look at the I'm looking at the photos behind you, and I remember you telling the story about your old Pentax camera that you had and the photographs that you took. And really, the point I'm trying to make is that a lot of times value, like we say, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Value is in the eye of the beholder as well, because Pentax wanted to trade that old camera that you had to give you a brand new one. The value in that was that was going to allow you to take better pictures, but the value for them was that it was going to allow them to have this old camera in their collection, in their exhibit, I think. So unpack that a little bit for us.
Yeah, I'm very glad that you heard that story. Because it's very much a childhood memory. So it was the story of how when I was a teenager, I was really into photography, and I'd saved up and got a very, very old Pentax camera. And then a friend of mine who worked in the camera industry, who I met sort of later on, he heard that Pentax had all of their historic cameras stolen. And they were looking to replace them. So they wanted my beaten up camera because it was precious to them. I got given the state of the art modern camera, which was precious to me. And yeah, it's the way that we see value, if we just see it in the way the world often sees value is just in a number. Mm-hmm. You know, so I sometimes say to people, what is the value of Apple computers? I did this the other day, and instantly someone said $3 trillion, which is an accurate answer if you want a market valuation, although that price goes up and down. But actually the point of what I was trying to make in that meeting was the value of Apple computers is it enabled me to get to that meeting because of the mapping tool. It enables me to talk to my children, and it enables me to do all sorts of different things and connect with people. I'm trying to open people's eyes to all those types of values. So I sometimes use the story of imagine you are put into a dark room, and there's a single spotlight in the ceiling, and it's shining down on one item, and it's a jewel, a really beautiful jewel, and it's resonating from every facet as the light picks it out. And I ask people, what is your focus now? You know, what are you thinking about if you're in that room? So your focus is entirely on the jewel and enjoying it, rightly so. Imagine then, I say, that there's a big crash and suddenly all the lights in the room are turned on. And you see that actually the room is full of jewels. And the jewel that you were looking at is actually not the biggest or the prettiest, and it's at the side of the room. Now, what is your focus? And they say, well, it's not actually on one particular jewel. It's on the array. It's on the vista of all of that, those jewels, and the beauty of them being together. And I guess that's what I'm trying to do, is to get people to sort of push back in their chair and say, today there was an array of ways that I was being called by the Lord to generate value, and that was in serving people, that was in doing my job to the best of my ability, that was in the beauty of the way I interacted with people. It's in the fruit of the Spirit, isn't it? It's by doing my work with love, joy, peace, patience, mm-hmm. kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. It's in the beauty of compassion on people. It's in the beauty of speaking truth in love to people. One of the things I find interesting is Paul, the Apostle Paul, when he's writing to the Thessalonian Christians, he's writing to some Christians that he was only there a little while before he had to leave the city, and they'd become Christians while he was there. And he was worried that they would not be continuing in the faith. So he writes them his letter and he says, I've actually heard that you are continuing in the faith. And do you know what the way that he knows that they're continuing in the faith? The first thing he says is, I know that you're continuing in the faith because now your work is produced by faith and your labor is prompted by love and your endurance is inspired by hope in the Lord Jesus. So he says, I mean, before, presumably they were working and laboring and enduring. But now he says, I can tell that your faith is having impact because the way that you're working is now produced by a different sort of faith, a belief in a God of who promises to provide and to sustain and to inspire us. And your love is prompted by a love that you know, an unconditional love that you know from God as his dearly loved children. So you're loving other people because you're loved yourself. And your endurance now isn't just, I'm going to be English and have a stiff upper lip and just power through this problem. But my endurance is inspired in knowing I will be going to a new creation earth. And, as in your profession, you need that, don't you, more than anyone, that we can heal people, but people die, and death is, I mean, the pandemic did that, didn't it, for us. It brought that into the picture, and yet we know that actually, as Jesus says, you will never die, and that there's a hope of new creation. I love the fact that in the new creation, relationships will be made right, and relationships that have gone bad on this earth, they say, well, and people say, well, they'll never sort it out, or it's broken forever, and say, well, no, actually, one day it will be mended.
Everything one will day, be restored, for sure. Yeah. And amen to that. And in the South, one thing that we should do, we would pass out the offering plate right now. This would be a great time to take up,
Andrew,
take up
we need
an
to
offering.
Get you down, Andrew, but, and but give in you a all pulpit.
Exactly. But in all seriousness, Andrew, we could continue on. Unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap it up. But what a pleasure it's been to have you on the podcast. On behalf of Baptist, thank you very much. And for our listeners, Andrew's book is A Life's Work, How to Find Meaningful Value in Everyday Work. You can find it Amazon, wherever you buy your favorite books. But once again, Andrew, thank you.
Thank you for your time. Yeah, thank you.